hopefully many of you, I know that many of you in the chat box were listening last week to a show we broadcast with a chat with Dave Eden from the Community Press Group. He was an ex-metropolitan policeman who eventually left the force and is now busy trying to set up what is can only be described as an extremely extensive idea of his, which involves not only getting individual and normal humans such as you and I trained up as sort of citizen journalists, as it were, trying to get trying to wrest a little bit of control over the gathering and choice, I guess, and the putting out of news. That's a fairly major thing in itself. It's an interesting idea. But also in the process of the conversation, it became apparent that also there was some hope of trying to get individuals who are acting irresponsibly in their chosen office to be held accountable for that. So rather than going for policies and for corporations, to actually go for individuals using the laws by which they are supposedly governed. Also in there was the idea that there'd be a lot more community activity as a result of, I guess, the kind of involvement of normal individuals in the gathering of news. It was felt that there was some chance of getting people to organise themselves and communicate and cooperate with each other. And there's going to be a fair degree of training and resource involved in that. Several things, really. So the kind of increase in community, the training of individuals. Elements of defending ourselves against the onslaught that we acknowledge to be happening at MSI, setting up the group itself, having some sort of attempt at trying to improve what's normally a social service nowadays, and several other, as well as encouraging community. I was aware whilst the show was going out that there were several things being said which were not in tune with the normal approaches of MSI. And I was especially aware of that when I was editing the podcast, which is now available, and I've posted it in the chat box there. But it's normally my policy when I'm interviewing people to find out what it is they think and let it flow as well as I can. It would have been extremely difficult to outline some of our approaches to Dave, because as he said, he's principally a policeman. Principally, that's all he's really aware of. And I was, congratulations to all the guys in the chat box who were judiciously fielding questions for Dave, which he was happy and competent to answer. Yeah, I became, even more aware that there were ideas in there and statements and things that were well worth reconsidering. Part of my reason for wanting to do this is I think that the community press group sounds like a pretty good idea. Its ambitions, as stated, are also, I think, worthy of further investigation and support. And I shall myself, as soon as possible, be trying to get myself onto one of their training days to get a little bit more detail on the stuff that Dave managed to cover in the couple of hours that we spent together. But I figured that one of the best things I could do was actually invite comments as far as possible from other MSI hosts and indeed from other people in the chat box if you want to join in. It was my real hope that I'd be able to get Vin to come on the show and work through some of the more interesting ideas, because that way hopefully we'll get a bit of detailed conversation on Dave's ideas and can obviously give him a link to whatever podcast arises from this particular show. I'm going to now play a couple more tunes, check on the strength of my stream and stuff, get Vin on the line and see if we can't start addressing some of the, things that probably wouldn't have appeared at all controversial to guys and gals that aren't listening to MSI. But in here, I guess we feel that there's a lot more room for discussion. So here come the Ruts and Babylon's Burning, probably about 5 minutes or so of music. And hopefully, if everything stays stable, I'll be coming back. Can you hear me, Vin?
I can indeed, loud and clear.
Very good. That's great. I should think that people can hear you as well, which is really grand. Thanks very much for joining us on the Dr. Rock radio show. It's your first time, I think.
Yeah, I'm amazed I've never been on with you before.
Obviously been really, really busy, both of us, I reckon. No, it's a real pleasure, especially to deal with some of the material that I want to go through tonight. I think it's going to be really helpful because I'm hoping we're going to be able to perhaps help inform the nascent community press group, because obviously Dave's experience is primarily, as he says, as a policeman, whereas we have a somewhat different approach. You obviously think it's quite a good idea to have kind of a community press corps, as it were, because you've set one up yourself, haven't you?
No, well, it wasn't me. It was Harry from We the People had this idea apparently about a year. Well, I think he had the idea years ago, but he got it done about a year and a half ago, I think. NUJ, National Union of Journalists, and I think Harry's set up NUJ, IRIJ, and something along those lines. I haven't got the exact specifics here in front of me. But the idea was, yeah, that, you know, if you want to be part of this, that you would, you know, have your own little so-called tag card that it's not exactly personal identification as such, but it would identify you as being part of the group. In other words, letting them know that, you know, we are here simply as journalists, not as citizen journalists or anything like that, just journalists, actual journalists. The idea is that there's nobody can stop you from saying you're a journalist. If you keep a journal, a record of events, and you publish that somewhere, somehow, for others to read openly, that is what a journalist is.
Yeah, and under freedom of speech, of course, we are free to write what we like, as long as we're not libelous of other people.
Even at that, you know, I mean, we at MSI, we were always conscious of that whole idea of, you know, are we being libelous? Now, personally, I don't worry, as I'm sure many know, I don't worry about somebody attempting to sue me in some legal manner. That wouldn't cause me any lost sleep anyway, shape or form. That said, as we are here on radio, I'd like to think we would be the same as we're out there operating as a journalist. And that being that, you know, good conduct, proper use of language, and an impartial stance to get to the bottom of the story, and to share with people in that regard, so that we're not, you know, even viewed as a potential, what's the expression? We're not viewed as a potential disruptive force. We're just simply trying to record, ask pertinent questions, and get relevant information out to people.
And relevant. Of course, we might well have a bit of an advantage there in that we've been training ourselves to ask questions, haven't we, in most regards?
Exactly. Now, you see, some people might... There you go. Freeman Jack's just put it in the chat box. Most people might be of the opinion that journalists might bring you... Using that term might bring you under the new press regulations in England. Not if you know what you're talking about. Not if you fully understand what you're doing, you won't. This is key. Along with most things, your understanding of and use of language is vital. I think many people need to really think about that. I think there's a lot of people looking up words in legal dictionaries and then just assuming that that's what they mean when others use them. And that is not actually the case. You know, if you use an expression or a string of words, if I want to say what you meant, what your intention was, I have to ask you, because you're the only one that can tell me how you intended to use the word X, Y, Z. Now, some people might say, oh, it's apparent. It's, you know, like the prima facie evidence, as it were, that it's clearly evident from his use of text, syntax, whatever, that he meant to say the following, whereby, you know, you might say, no, that was not my intention. I meant to imply X, Y, Z, not 1, 2, 3. So I think our use of language, you know, as we get a better command of the language, that will ease off for a lot of people. Perhaps people, if I could recommend, if anybody's going to do something along these lines, is that they learn how to speak and think and talk in the passive sense of language. It's impartial and passive, and it's extraordinarily powerful. It's extraordinarily, in fact, it's exceptionally powerful. I don't know if you saw the little video I made earlier today about that donation that was going out from one of our donors.
I did. That is just such fantastic news, isn't it? I mean, that's real hard evidence, I'd say, that we're making progress and making a difference. And thanks to whoever it was that made that possible, really.
Absolutely. Well, the reason I'm talking about that is if people look at the language I used in that letter, that's a prime example, as it were, of that class of usage of language.
Yeah.
The reason, I mean, I, if you want, I'll take a moment to just go through why I did it in the manner I did.
I think that'd be very useful. Very useful, Vin. Yeah, please do.
Right, it'll only take me a second. Hang on, let me just find the file there. Typical. Can't find it anywhere.
Yeah. It's, I mean, you know, as a kind of bit of background, one of the things that I notice people doing a lot is actually using language which is far from passive, which actually is directly inflammatory. And I think it seems to cause so much difficulty. I have noticed myself since listening to MSI that I spend a lot more time trying to be, I guess one of the words that's commonly used is diplomatic, really, is trying to make progress in a conversation without trying to wind the other man up.
Exactly. So I have it here now. So the language I used was, regarding our recent phone conversation, I didn't know exactly when the phone conversation was, and I didn't have time to go through, so I just said, regarding our recent phone conversation, I've addressed it to three separate people. And then, as you are aware, that's a nice phrase as well, again, because I've related to the phone conversation recently. And I said, details of which were made available in the New Ross Standard recently. Now, the reason I'm pointing at that is so that nobody kind of jumps up and says, oh, we can't talk about this case, no individual cases. So I'm letting them know the source of the information came from the New Ross Standard newspaper. And I said, our generous listener has entrusted €500, not donated and not given to, because I didn't want anyone to think that this money that had been passed, or this apparent money that had been passed to me, had been donated to MSI Radio, because it had not. We had been entrusted with it, so I was in a trust position. Now I must act as the executor of the trust and pass that amount, which was now stapled to this letter, to Wexford County Council, to be lodged into the account, and very importantly, and in favor of. Okay, and then I pass the trust onto them by saying, we trust you will perform such action with alacrity, that's speed, in other words, and inform Miss Delaney of same. And the idea there is I was letting them know, first it was entrusted to me, and I'm executing that trust, and I'm passing it to you, and it's now, you're now entrusted.
Yeah.
Do you see? Yeah. So, and then I, of course, offer any assistance they may or may not, may or may not require. There's the numbers to contact.
Yeah. So it's simple and to the point. I think that the trust thing's really important as well, because you're effectively moving responsibility there, aren't you?
Well, what you're doing is you're carrying out the function of the trust that I was entrusted with. In other words, the donor was trusting me. Because, I mean, that's, you know, a lot of people would consider 500 sheets of wrapping paper, a fairly decent amount to just send to some guy on an internet radio on the other side of the ocean.
Well, it doesn't happen every day.
No, well, in fact, it's actually happened three times so far, but again, with the same donor, which is fantastic. That's three evictions we've managed to put the kibosh on.
Is that how much it costs to effectively stop one?
It depends on the situation. Now, these would be like local authority / council housing situations, where people would be in arrears of rent rather than mortgage.
Okay.
But so, either way, this donor's actions, and by passing over the few bob in this manner, is halting these people from being evicted. You know,
and does that see it off, or is it another sort of holding action?
Well, it is a holding action, but it also puts time back on the side of the people in that situation. So hopefully they can improve their position and situation and have a bit of time to educate themselves. You see, we're also hoping that these people will sign up to MSI Radio and begin to educate themselves about how to actually go about things in a, maybe in a different manner, shall we say, that can assist everyone.
Yeah, so you'd be thinking presumably of the official offer there as a prime way of carrying the situation forward, having been rescued.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, it generates word of mouth. It lets people know about us. It's positive all round. You know, it'll build up and build up and build up. Apparently this guy, you know, he's a fan of MSI Radio and, you know, they want to encourage people to tune in and to get educated. And he felt, well, this is a way he could help from where he was.
Yeah. And it is a great way of encouraging community, isn't it? Because it's effectively somebody helping people that he doesn't even know, a thing that many people in today's world would find quite surprising.
Exactly. Well, and on top of all of that, the families that he's been helping, they would have youngish children, some of them. And he said, you know, so now they won't have to be relocated and they won't have to find new schools this close to Christmas. They won't be upset. The family gets to live in their home.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I know a lot of people might think that even, you know, that even if they are moved from where they are, well, the council will rehouse them again, etc., etc. But now they don't have that disruption in their life and they do have a bit of time on their hands and it's, you know, it's considered and viewed as being beneficial and good all around.
Yeah. Yeah, excellent stuff. And of course the trust business happens because trust exists, doesn't it? I know a lot of people think trusts are complex things, which indeed they are, but the actual trust that people put in you when they give you money for such purposes is a trust that exists generally between ourselves and something that should be encouraged.
Of course. I mean, but that's partly the reason why I did the video. I said, well, if I make this video, I mean, everybody will see me, you know, the few bob will be stapled to the sheet of paper. It's going to get folded up on the video and stuck in the envelope, sealed. And that will be gone, recorded delivery.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Fantastic. It's just, but just to get back to the other topic, again, so the use of language is important. The perspective is important. And when you're reporting on something, I think it's important that you actually remove your own emotional attachment to, as far as you possibly can, to the situation, to be fair to the topic. I do find a lot of people, when using language, I mean, that's why I've been trying to, my main message on MSI really, since the beginning, has been to pay attention to your use of language, folks, because it is literally the difference between, well, it can be the difference between life and death for some people, being evicted and not being evicted, particularly people who are attending so-called evictions. I'm finding as I'm looking at what's going on, many of those people in attendance may not realize their action may even cause the family to get evicted. And that would be something I really would not want on my conscience. To just clarify what I'm talking about there, Dr. Rock, if you're in somebody's home and if a knock comes to the door and if you just reach out your hand and open that door, you may be letting somebody into that home, which may cause that eviction. Remember, folks, if you're in somebody else's home, they've trusted you. You know, if we're talking about trust for a moment, they've trusted you. They have put their trust in you that you're not going to let any nasties into their home that they don't want. You know, even talking to somebody through a closed door or a closed window, that's enough for these guys in the blue suits and these guys calling themselves sheriffs and bailiffs, etc. That's enough for them to construe in their mind that somehow they've been invited in. So if you're in somebody else's home and if there's an eviction going on, make sure you're not the one to open up and you're not the one to talk to anybody on the outside.
Yes. And that's exactly the kind of principle that we'd like to see applied to the journalism, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So the idea that Harry had from We the People was that everybody would have a card, as it were, a card-carrying member, so to speak, of the National Union of Journalists of Ireland, as it were. And now some of the points that came up in your interview with Dave Eden, he was talking about insurance, public liability insurance, and that type of thing.
Yes.
Now, he may or may not know, but every public building, as you're out on the streets and every public building, believe it or not, they already have public liability cover, which covers you anyway.
That's every public building, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that would also be every council house. They have insurance. To be honest, I don't think there's probably not a square foot on this planet that's not covered by insurance somewhere.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if there was. So yeah. You're probably insured if you're standing on the moon.
Yeah.
I mean, your passport for a start. A passport is an insurance policy. It says so right in there. Most people just don't know how to read it.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll find a relevant section here for you if you want, just to explain it to you. If you look at the inside cover, most people don't look at the inside cover of most passports, has something along the following. The Minister for Foreign Affairs of Ireland requests all whom it may concern to allow the bearer, citizen of Ireland, to pass freely and without hindrance and to afford the bearer all necessary assistance and protection. Now, the reason that's all in there, you see, they have an agreement. There's an agreement in place, and that agreement has to be based upon suretyship and trust, and therefore there's an insurance policy, there's a trust position, and there's a contractual set of obligations on parties involved.
Yeah.
So, basically, once you're carrying that, I mean, that's your insurance policy. I mean, if I go to Spain, say, for example, this passport document will take care of any damage I do in Spain. You know, the Irish government, as it were, will say to the Spanish government, well, okay, well, the guy caused a lot of damage. How much damage did he cause? 10 million. Fine. We'll take care of that for you. Now, they might say, well, there's a criminal element that's left over. And they say, oh, yeah, well, you can take care of him for the criminal element, but we'll take care of the damage.
Right.
Depending on its cause. Now, this is not, you know, as I said, there's certain types of thing. So, for example, point number 7 here, travellers are advised to take out adequate insurance to cover against accident, illness, or loss of possessions. Irish diplomatic or consular officials do not have funds to help citizens in financial need or to meet expenses that a citizen cannot cover because of exchange control rules. But what it's not saying there is that we're taking care of everything else, because they have to be. See, the whole planet basically at the moment is operating through this commercial structure. So there has to be insurance policies in place for when we travel. But the insurance policies are limited, as it were, to certain things. So some things will be covered and some things wouldn't be covered. So if you, for example, if you go on a murdering rampage, well, that's actually covered, believe it or not.
Which you wouldn't actually expect, would you, given that you are causing their harm, loss and damage and... You know, as a criminal event, as it were, I wouldn't have expected insurance to be covering that.
No, but criminals are insured in that regard. I mean, you know, if somebody, I know it sounds a bit crazy, but as I said, if you, for example, went to Spain and went on a murdering rampage, I mean, all those Spanish people that you killed would be buried, etc., and that all has to be paid for, and that would come out of the funds would exchange between whomever from the British consulate, whatever, to the Spanish. That's their agreement. They have all these agreements in place. But as I said, the criminal element that was left over, well, your government would say to the Spanish government, well, feel free to do whatever the hell you do in your jurisdiction with people who are criminal in that regard.
Yeah.
They'll not object, you see. So, for example, the Englishman who was executed in China there, was it last year, the year before, for drug trafficking? Tony Blair, I think it was, or one of them was trying to intervene, but eventually he just said, nope. Okay, well, effectively, they didn't have that agreement in place with China, so that's why the Chinese just, right, fair enough, execute them, bang.
Right. Well, that's a whole new interesting area to me. It hadn't occurred to me that the passport had that kind of that kind of power, as it were, or indeed that the commercial codes that we appear to be labouring under were, but I suppose it makes a lot of sense. Everything is required to be insured one way or the other, so we're told.
It's a double-edged sword, as they say. The commercial construct that's operating itself is not an evil entity. It's not. It's just a construct. It in itself is not evil. The problem is, of course, how people operate with that structure. You know, as I've often said to people, look, having a birth certificate and a passport and a driving license and all these documents and contracts in place, that's not a problem if you know how to operate. And by that I mean if you have good conduct and you're of peaceful intent and you're trying to not harm anybody, that's your purpose, your function is not to cause harm, loss, or injury, but you do want to live your life and have a bit of fun. And, you know, you can have all these things. It's not bad. If you allow them to be misused and you go along with it, that can be very bad. But that's because you more than likely don't know how to handle the document that you have in your hand or the structure that you're operating with or the contract. Once you are fully aware of what's going on, you'll find things aren't that difficult.
Yeah. And all that information's out there for those who look hard enough.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, even for example, in the interview you did with Dave Eden, he said some things about law, which, you know, I'm sure many, I'm aware that for you to have the flow of the interview going, you didn't pick him up on every little thing, yeah. Which is fair enough, you know, and we all appreciate that. But
that's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this show, I must admit, because there was some that I let go whilst the interview was happening, partly because actually it would have been incredibly difficult to start talking to Dave from scratch, as it were, about the things that we've been talking about for, what, 3-4 years or whatever it is.
Exactly.
But I did feel as it was going on that it was going to need to be returned to, which is why I thought we might have a go at doing this evening. Before we get on to what he said about the laws, because that was right at the top of my list, I was quite surprised that he didn't take a caning in the chat box for that one. But one of the things he was concerned about, I think, with the liability insurance was the business of duty of care. He was making the point that if somebody does come to you and tell you that they've been abused or otherwise harmed by somebody else, you need to be really careful who you tell about that, because by putting it into the public domain, a bit like your suggestions with the evictions and things, you can ensure that the whole thing is then not possible to try or examine in any legal sense.
Exactly. Well, you see, for example, it's kind of like a priest and a publican, you know. I mean, down through the years, we've all relied, I'm sure in Ireland anyway, on, you know, telling the odd story here and there, admission of guilt to both priests and publicans. You know, they all understand. Anybody who works behind a bar understands if there's a guy in misery guts land and he's across the way and you're feeding him whiskey all night and he starts pouring his heart and soul out to you, you almost have an obligation to forget everything he said as he says. Whereas the priest in confession, for example, you know, you're talking, he's supposed to be a conduit to God, and that's why he can't allow anybody to know what you said.
Yeah.
And for a journalist, to not just to protect the integrity of journalism, but to protect your sources. And it's not even a case that you're protecting the sources. I don't like that phrase because I don't think you're protecting your source. What you're doing is you're accepting somebody told you something in confidence. Now, if somebody were to confess a murder to you in confidence, the fact that they're telling you they broke the actual law, that releases you from the obligation to keep that secret. So you have to be able to discern yourself. You can't just say, well, the guy told me he killed somebody, therefore I can't tell anybody because he told me in private. If he admits to breaking the law in that regard, that's different. One outweighs the other. Most reasonable people, I'm sure, would agree with that. But, for example, if they say, well, look, I've found some corruption and wrongdoing in a government department or in my local school or whatever. No, for that you protect them. And you're not protecting them as such. You're protecting journalism and the integrity of journalism, because if you don't hold that, who's going to tell a journalist anything?
Yes.
You may hang up your camera, hang up your recorder, forget about it. You've just made yourself redundant. You've made journalism redundant for you. You know, and that's why even here on MSI, you know, I mean, we have established a website where we interact and where, you know, all hosts here on MSI, we all strive. I think we all strive for the highest standards rather than to just barely come up to the lowest. And I think that's very important. I mean, I think the longer we're in operation and the better we get, I think the mainstream media will eventually be looking up to the likes of MSI Radio and aspiring to be like us. I'm sure already many of them wish they could say what we can say.
Yeah.
Because they're having their hands tied. Their organizations, and indeed their unions, their journalistic unions, etc., they are having their hands tied and being slowly tied up in knots by the legal departments. And they're saying, oh, you can't say this, you can't say that, you can't say that either. And for example, that's why most hosts on mainstream media, as it stands, most, if not all of them, all have a legal background. You might think it's just some DJ guy belting out tunes and saying a few things and interviewing people. But I guarantee you, if he's interviewing people and if he covers any sensitive material whatsoever, more than likely he's had a legal training background.
That's a surprise to me, as although it is something I've been thinking about, having spoken to Dave last week and thinking about the duty of care thing, that I guess, you know, certainly for live shows and things, I guess to a certain extent, the main broadcasting media and stuff protect themselves by having a 15 or 30 second delay, don't they? So they can throw the off switch if anything awkward happens.
Yeah, no, we don't have that. We're live and alive and loud and proud, as they say. However, as I said, I mean, we don't have to worry about some of the legalistic stuff, as it were. Whereas I would be concerned if somebody, I'll give you a perfect example. There was a host we had a year or two ago, and he was playing a recording of an audio, and I was listening to it thinking, something is not right with this. And then the host announced that the chap he was interviewing in this audio was unaware that it was being played live. He was unaware that he was being recorded in the conversation. Secondly, he didn't know it was going to be broadcast live on the radio. And thirdly, he did not realize he was being interviewed for a radio interview. The moment I found out, I hit what we all call now as the big red button here. Now, that host was removed instantly from the radio. And, you know, an apology was sent to the chap. And he graciously accepted our apology. So, you know, I mean, for me, as I said, and for us and the rest of the guys, we have to accept that we actually are responsible. It's not a case of, are we responsible? No, we actually are responsible for every single thing we do. That's what sovereignty is all about. You are responsible. I don't try to evade, duck, and dodge my responsibilities. Quite the opposite. I accept them. All of them.
Yes.
And once you have that in your mind, and if you're reporting on somebody and your intent, reporting a story, your intent is hopefully always positive. Not that means you're going to skew a story to some direction it doesn't belong in, but that you're open and honest and you're impartial. So you're going to just report to people the facts. Don't forget the function of journalism is to report to the sovereign people the facts. So to my mind, if you skew something, you're betraying that trust that people have placed in you as a decent, genuine journalist. And quite frankly, I find that repugnant. I think that's disgusting.
It's all too commonplace, though, alas, it seems to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And indeed, we're now hearing, aren't we, that the courts are endeavouring with some success in some cases to oblige journalists in some sense to reveal their sources when in fact...
I tell you the workaround they're using there. Believe it or not, for example, let's look at the American so-called news situation. For example, look at Fox News and MSN and all of these other things. They are news entertainment programs. So those people who are operating as so-called journalists, believe it or not, they are considered talent. And they operate under a completely different set of rules. Those people are, strictly speaking, not journalists. Not just journalists, rather.
Yeah.
So for the likes of, I don't know who we're talking about, what's the name? Bill O'Reilly, or that, I don't mean just Bill O'Reilly on his own, but other, you know, so-called big journalists. Name another guy. Name another one of those guys for me. What's the grey-haired guy?
Paxman.
No, he's English. I mean, yeah. In America.
No, I don't know much about American journalism, because it has to be said, I don't know too much about English journalism nowadays.
Right, well, there's a lot of them, but as they get called repeaters, you see, by David Icke and people like that. And they're not incorrect. And the reason is because those people are not just journalists. They are also talent. And they're operating kind of, Wolf Blitzer, thank you, perfect example. They operate kind of on both sides of the line. They jump one side, jump the other, jump one side, jump the other. So there's a different position there. Now, if you look at the news in Ireland, for example, RTE News in particular, you'll notice on RTE News in Ireland, the journalist comes on, reads the news impartially, makes absolutely no expression and offers no opinion about it whatsoever, because in Ireland, if the journalist offered an opinion as they were reading the news, there'd be uproar. We would not stand for that. We would be very quick to tell them, listen, pal, your job is to sit your ass in that chair and tell us, the sovereign people, the news. You keep your opinions to yourself.
Yeah.
Will decide. We will form our opinions on the information. Your job is to provide the information. That's it.
Yeah. I did notice when in the days when I was listening much more commonly to Babylon Broadcasting, I did notice a completely different quality between the news as broadcast in England or Wales and the same news as broadcast on the World Service. I noticed that the World Service tended to be using simply nouns and verbs and were missing out adjectives and various other things. It did sound a lot more like what you're describing, kind of straight down the line list of facts. Because really, when every time you include an adjective, a way of describing, this is what I feel anyway, when you try to augment or describe the nature of the thing that you're trying to put across, then you are effectively telling people what to think. You are putting some kind of opinion into their head rather than just the points that need to be made.
Yeah, you might think this has been quite pedantic, and you might be forgiven for saying, well, look, you're splitting hairs here. Actually, yes, we are splitting hairs, because those hairs do require splitting. They do. They absolutely do. So, for a news broadcaster to just simply come on and say, look, three soldiers in some country killed three civilians. That is the news. And, or, you could do the Bill O'Reilly, Anderson Cooper version of it and say, oh, today three such and such as three American heroes defended a position and, unfortunately three insurgents were killed. But then again, the insurgents are pinheads, or whatever the hell the expression he used. What were those pinheads doing there? Clearly that was a military target. What do you think? Over to you, Anderson Cooper. And he might say, well, yeah, now suddenly you have a whole different thing happening. You don't just have the news going on anymore. You now have spin, confusion. And you see, now the people listening to that show, they thought they were listening to a news program. Actually, they were being entertained. They're having their heartstrings plucked. They're having It is a form of NLP, but it's also, it's even more insidious than that, in my opinion. They're having their opinions formed and handed to them. In other words, they say, well, look, we're all Republicans on this broadcast, and this is the way Republicans think. What do you say, Bob? And Bob goes, yeah, I agree with Republicans, or sometimes, but you're having your opinions formed for you. In Ireland, the news is the news.
So is there a difference between what we're talking about here and, say, the movement over time from the word, from the word freedom fighter to the word guerrilla to the word they now use, which is pretty much across the board, terrorist?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, the Irish people have been used to this one for a long, long time. I mean, I often wondered, for example, if you look at the so-called terrorism that's happening in America, compare that to what supposedly happened between Ireland and England. And I say between Ireland and England because terrorism, every night the RTE radio and TV program here, and same BBC in England, they would report dissident Republicans and activities and sectarianism and la 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 and all this stuff. And as a kid, you see, I'd look at this and I'd think, I can't make head nor tail of this. I couldn't. So I switched off because I didn't understand the language they were using. Now, it was like they kind of went the other way. They went overly what's the word? Overly were they were almost abusing the semantic rules, if you get me.
Yeah.
I mean, and effectively, they're correct. I mean, it is all just semantics, right? But it's semantics, nonetheless. And the importance of that was, I noticed, as I was looking at all these newscasts, and I mean, I'm 44 years of age now, or thereabouts, all the things that supposedly happened in England from the so-called IRA, etc., well, the English people weren't getting patted down and lining up in queues and going through cavity searches, going for the tube trains in the morning or going for their buses or aircraft, you know, and getting on boats. It didn't happen. And you apparently the people in England had years and years and years of this, but apparently no reaction.
Mm.
It's as if they didn't care, right? They just come on the news and say, oh, that's terrible, it's a disgrace, whatever, but this is what happened. In fact, they wouldn't even say it was in Ireland. They wouldn't even say that in Ireland. They just say this happened, that happened, and the other happened. Thanks very much. Good night. Here's Bob with the weather.
Yeah.
England, you were getting a bit more opinions. They ended up with news programs, the likes of Paxman, after the news. He would follow on and he would begin to construct the Americana, as it were, a news entertainment show. We had one here in Ireland too. They called it Today Tonight. That was the same type of thing. So, but they blended the news program from before with the Today Tonight Jeremy Paxman style program, and that's what Americans were getting handed up to them as news. I mean, I was absolutely shocked when I was in Chicago. I flicked on the TV one day and I sat down to try and watch what they called regular television. I couldn't believe it. It was so imbecilic. And I don't mean to insult the people of America, because it's not their fault that somebody is shoving this garbage down their intellectual throat. You know, the repetition in the programs is unbelievable, because we, you know, when we see American programs here, we think the repetition is amazing. It's incredible. It's just, it never stops. And the reason for that is they have huge ad breaks between each one, and you'd be forgiven for forgetting what the first part of the show was about by the time they start the second show. So they start the show. They tell you what the show is about. They have an ad break for a week and they come back and they have to tell you about the beginning of the show again.
Yeah. So one of the things that I guess we're saying, if, I mean, cause this shows how complex the business is of gathering and writing news. One of the things we're really saying is that it's most important that the journalist, the person that's doing the writing, doesn't get in the way of the facts.
Correct, and you must have, and it's a sacred thing amongst true journalists, I believe, and the word is integrity. Integrity. And that has to be your central tenet. That has to be, you know, that has to be above everything, that you will not hand over your journalistic integrity. It's kind of like a man or a woman. Do not hand over your sovereignty. It's the same thing to a journalist. If you're going to operate as a journalist, all you really have is your integrity as a journalist. You can only lose that once. You can only lose it once. It's like the old joke, the guy, he builds ships and he builds bridges and he builds thing and he's complaining, nobody calls me such and such the shipbuilder. They don't call me such and such the bridge builder. One bloody sheep, you know.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It must be very difficult, in fairness, to, I guess, maintain that kind of integrity when most of the journalists that most of us get to read or listen to are working for four or five individuals, effectively.
Yeah, I don't think it is. I think in fairness, most actual journalists guard it, you know, quite intensely, and they recognize that. Unfortunately, what's happening is, again, editors and newspapers, particularly the Red Top style newspapers, they kind of made them, they would call them, say, paparazzi. Well, you're not really a journalist, you're paparazzi. You see, they'd start to give them subdivisions. Or you're a sports journalist. Well, or you're current affairs, you're fashion, you're the, and suddenly they were thinking, well, hang on a minute, who are the actual news journalists? Who are the guys with the integrity amongst this group? It became hard to distinguish.
Yeah. So the whole thing's quite, in need of quite a lot of thought, isn't it, before you put yourself into a yes. position of deciding to write. But MSI seems to be good practice, because, I mean, it only occurred to me again, thinking about all of this stuff, that effectively I am a radio journalist. I, you know, because I am interviewing people here, and we are interviewing We are interviewing people about things which, as we know, are described as alternative views. My podcast page is apparently blocked on the ferry, and the reason for that blocking is the category alternative views, and it forced me to ask the question, alternative to what?
Uh-huh.
You know?
Well, you know, I mean, there was a news program I used to love, and it was called, it was the only news program I watched, and it was called No Comment News. Do you remember that one?
No, I don't. Sounds good.
They just showed you film footage of events as they transpired, if they happened to have their cameras there, and nobody made any comments about it. You just got to sit and watch. And you could listen.
So that's the ultimate, really, isn't it? Because nothing's getting refracted there at all. You're just seeing it as it happens, and you don't even get to hear words written by other people in between you and it.
Exactly. Well, now, in fairness, Sean McGuire's just after putting up a very important point there on the screen. See, for example, you know, when we do express an opinion here on MSI, we do generally, I mean, I've noticed almost all of us do this, and I've always done it. If I'm offering an opinion on something as I talk, I will say now, okay, this is my opinion. I'm now giving you my opinion, just so you don't confuse my opinion as an instruction on how to feel about something.
Yes.
Because I'm not trying to influence how you feel. I'm trying to, give you the information. So when I'm talking about documents and language and all the things that were or were not, or may not have been said, apparently. Well, that show was still on, so it's good, Colin. Fantastic. That'll tell you how long it is since I've watched television. But when I'm going to say to you, for example, if I say to you, look, Dr. Rock, in England, every single man, woman, and child are known as subjects, but really subjects, and then I would say, in my opinion, is just another word for slave.
Yeah.
Less than. So in other words, I do let you know my opinion part of it. And I don't just say, you're all slaves, because that's not a nice way to talk to people at first.
But it is difficult to deny that they're all known, that we are all known as subjects.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, if you ask a lot of people over there, and I've done so, yeah, they consider themselves quite happy to be subjects. They don't apparently really, I mean, because I've said to people, what does that mean to you? What does it mean to you to be a subject? I mean, I'd love for somebody to do a vox pop on the street over there one day, just go out with a microphone and say to people, are you a loyal subject of the crown? And if they say, well, yes, I am. So can you tell me what being subject, what does that actually mean to you? What do you think that's all about? I'd be fascinated to hear the replies.
Yeah, that would be an interesting experiment to perform. It would.
You see, we can't do that one over here because, as I said, you know, again, the people over here, we were led to believe we weren't subjects of the crown.
Yes.
Even though it seems as if, you know, the provisional government apparently are, and those operating under it apparently are too, but that's, They've allowed, as it were, they've allowed the people here to think they were not subjects of the crown. And therefore, for the last 90 odd years, and therefore we've held and hold a different perspective about that. If somebody said to an Irish guy, I mean, if you go out with a microphone on the streets of Dublin, asking the people on the streets as a vox pop, you know, how does it feel to be a subject of the crown? You know, I'd suggest you'd want to be wearing body armor.
Yeah, yes,
that
indeed.
That could get quite intense at spots.
Yeah. So let's have a quick look at that, because the bit that you lighted on my chat with Dave was the thing that really struck me on the way through it. It came in a couple of bits, really, but the first bit, he said that they are not their laws, they are our laws.
Right. Well, can I ask you, first of all, I mean, before we get to me, what did you feel about that when he said that?
Well, the first thing that sprung to my mind was that I've seen several bits of YouTube vid with various parts of officialdom, such as it is, admitting that we are, in fact, policed by consent.
Mm-hmm.
That being the case, I would assume that they are only my laws if I consent to them being my laws.
Right. I'd suggest maybe Dave doesn't fully understand or comprehend the very specific but yet subtle, linguistically subtle difference between saying our laws and their laws and law, in fact. He is correct in what he says in one regard, that they are our laws, because they do use our law, as it were, to attach us to their legal process and construct. And we usually, 99% of the time, we usually do grant the subject matter to them to do such a thing. How can I explain this? Okay, so for example, let's say an envelope arrives here and it has the sovereign seal HARP on it, but it doesn't have the word ERA underneath. Okay, so I know, okay, there's no ERA, so that's not coming from the 32 County Sovereign Republic of ERA as a notification or some description to me. So what the court system are relying upon is they want you to put ERA, as it were, underneath that, here in Ireland anyway, they want you to put ERA underneath that by picking it up, opening it up, reading it, apparently comprehending it, and then bringing the sovereign ERA, as it were, into a different venue, out of where you were, and into another jurisdiction to have a legal determination made. And that's what we're mostly doing without realizing it. If you really think about it, you see these things become clear in your head. But we've been doing that. So it's the same thing over there in England. I mean, I keep saying to people, listen to the national anthem. Confound their politics, confuse their knavish tricks.
Yeah, what a mate.
In over us, etc., etc. I mean, you couldn't make it up. I mean, everybody is actually singing to one woman in this case, as it were, the wearer of the crown, or the entity known as the crown, as it were, please subjugate us. We're happy in our subjugation. Go on, knock yourself out, do what you like. We'll take it. We love being subjugated. And yet when British people, or people that consider themselves British people, say, I'm a loyal, royal British subject, you know, they say it with pride. And again, you're basically telling me you're proud to be a slave, which I find incredible.
Yeah. At the same time as regularly singing Britons never, never, never shall be slaves.
I know.
It is a subtle point, but really that the moment that your example of the letter arriving with the harp on it, but not with the error, when it arrives, it's not your law, but you make it your law by sending it back.
Well, I operate in accordance with my law. I say, oh, somebody wants me to give them my sovereignty. Well, they're shit out of luck because I'm using it.
Yeah.
I can't give what I can't remove from. I mean, if I could remove it from myself, you know, if you said to me, hey, Vin, can I borrow a bag of sugar off you? Well, I don't. A, it's not part of me, so I can pick it up and just say, sure, here, you're welcome to it. That's not going to cause me an injury. But if you said to me, Vin, I've had an accident. I've chopped off my right hand. Can you send me yours, please? Well, I'm thinking, well, I'm kind of using it at the moment.
Yeah. and effectively, are we not doing the same thing, you know, when we get these brown envelopes through the door that say private and confidential on them?
Exactly.
And we choose to open them up and interact with them. We're doing the same thing as you just described with the with your sovereign seal, or the non-sovereign seal, as it were.
Let's do it from your perspective, as it were, over in the UK. So an envelope, as you say, arrives and it has private and confidential, HMRC, blah, 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 and all this stuff in it. And people say, and through the window, you can see your name and address, for example, right?
Yeah.
So I say to people, stop seeing through the window and see the actual window itself, and then don't see through it. And therefore, you cannot see what's beneath. Just see the window. So in other words, when you just see the window, you know, as in, if I'm looking at a window, just look at the first pane of glass, this side of the glass only. Don't look through. Just look at the first pane as it meets your eye. Don't look through it. And then recognize, well, it doesn't actually have anything other on there other than Her Majesty's HMC, blah, 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 private and confidential. Now you know it's not addressing you.
Yeah.
Because they have put you on the outside. Apparently they've put you on the inside. If you peer through the window, don't peer through it.
Yeah. And look, that, of course, what people see when they do peer through the window is not necessarily them either, is it?
Well, of course not. I mean, it's like, you know, the guy who knocked here one day and he held up a little bit of plastic thingy to me, and he was going, hi, I'm such and such from the senseless. I call it the senseless. He said, "That's me." And I said, "What?" "That's you," pointing at this little tag thing. I said, "That's you." And he looked at me. He said, "Yeah." And I looked down again. "Are you sure?" And then he looked and he became confused. And he went, "Well, no, no. I mean, no. No, I don't mean that's me." And I go, "Right." But it was enough to put him on the back foot. And suddenly he was, you know, he realized suddenly he had said something inordinately stupid, really.
Yeah. Yeah, which isn't something that, I mean, this is why it's all such a, why it would have been a very subtle and difficult thing to deal with in the flow of the conversation with Dave, because you are the only ID there is, really, aren't you? All the other things are.
Again, I no longer call it ID as such. I call it id. What it actually is id, the id and the ego. The id is the opposite, the other side, as it were, of ego. That's the passive. That's why it's the id entity that they will allow in.
Yeah.
They will not let the ego entity in, because as far as they're concerned, the king is in here or the queen is in here, and the king or queen don't like big egos knocking around. They don't mind passive people knocking around because their ego is big enough already, and two big egos, well, that causes problems. So to keep the peace, don't forget, every officer swears to keep Her Majesty's peace, not your peace, not the public's peace. It's in their oath. People over there really need to go look that up. They say they keep their peace, but whose peace? It's not your peace. It's for Her Majesty's peace.
Mm. But when we look at the name, as it were, that's, if we do look through the translucent sheet on the front of the envelope, the name itself isn't us either. It's something entirely different. So once again, in a sense, it's not mine. It's only mine if I choose to take it on board, or if I choose to step into it and use it for whatever reason. And in fact, to admit that I am that person is itself, that person, yeah, is itself a fraud, isn't it?
Well, it's an offer. It's not actual fraud until you open it and go, "Oh, look, this is to me." You're the one committing fraud.
Yes, exactly.
You know, you've decided apparently you're not you. Apparently you or some of you are a part of you, or, you know, somehow or other you've transmogrified yourself and you've become associated and attached with this piece of paper. It's only an intellectual attachment. The so-called fictitious entity, as it were, it's not. There is actually no fictitious entities. There aren't any. People need to get that one through their head. There are no Ronald McDonald, folks. I hate to shatter some illusions here, but Ronald McDonald doesn't actually exist. Paying a fine to a government, for example, for going 31 miles an hour in a 30-mile-an-hour zone is the equivalent of saying, you know, Mickey Mouse is an SOB, and then writing a letter of apology to Mickey Mouse and sending finance to him. You know, there's no one there to take it, accept it. It's just Mickey Mouse does not exist, folks. He's not real.
And all of these things are effectively addressed to Mickey Mouse.
Exactly. Exactly. And you, for some reason, you're accepting, actually, Mickey Mouse is a terrible nice chap. And, you know, I'm sorry if I offended Mickey.
Yeah.
It's bonkers.
And you touched on another important distinction, I think, when we're saying, you know, that there are laws. Obviously, Dave, as a policeman, is assuming that what's being visited on us is actually the law, whereas I've heard many times on MSI that what's actually being made is an offer of contract, which is only the first stage in any particular procedure.
Everything. Offer, acceptance, consideration. The three main elements of contract. And then, of course, the fourth most powerful one being performance. Offer, acceptance, consideration, performance. If you perform, how could you have a complaint? You see, if I send you, so look, let's say Dr. Rock, I take up what we call a piece of paper and I write a final demand to Dr. Rock, MSI Radio, whatever stuff you own, send it to me, everything. And, or else I'm going to send the boys around. Now, if you open that and you read that and you go, "Oh my God, MSI Radio is after me here. What choice do I have?" Because you've sent the boys around. And you send me all your stuff. Well, did I defraud you or did you defraud yourself?
Yeah.
Now, you might say, "Well, hang on a minute, Vin. I mean, in the past, you've done this. You've sent the boys around to people. I know you have." And sure. But my boys who went around, they all had an oath of office. And you didn't accept and acknowledge their oath of office, thereby allowing them to operate outside of that office. So now do you have a complaint?
Yes, another important point, I guess, there, because that's another effective acceptance of allowing legislation to be applied maybe outside the strictures that it should be applied under. And once again, it's basically ignorance and failure to engage correctly that's enabling that to happen.
It's always outside. So, for example, as I've been saying here for a long time now, I hear people, especially in England for some reason, saying, I'm holding you to your oath. Are you here today under your oath? They don't finish the sentence, which is oath of office. An oath is required. It's merely the tool used to enter office. This is why they are officers. So if it was me, I would be very happy to let them know, are you addressing me? I don't recognize you. Who are you? Blah, 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 etc. If they say, I'm Constable yada yada, I accept and acknowledge your oath of office, and I'm holding you to that office. Now, even if they take out the nightstick and bounce it off your melon, well, that's unfortunate, but that doesn't mean you won't have redress later on. You can handle your affairs, assuming you survive, you're having your melon split. You can handle your affairs later.
And that's a redress that doesn't exist unless you do hold them to their office.
Exactly. Because other than that, you've allowed them to operate as commercial entities only. Well, sure, everybody knows commercial entities are only fictitious, right?
Yeah.
And why are you allowing it in your life? That's the question I'd like people to think about.
Yeah.
We are allowing all of this, all of it. And as soon as we simply disallow it from our lives individually, one at a time, the whole thing just evaporates. But we also have to have our own structures in place. So you need to make the friends with people you need to make friends with. You need to, locate your clean, fresh water supply. You need to have your food sourced, planted or stashed until you can't plant or whatever. You need to get these things done. You need to be competent to educate your children, or if not, form a group of people who are competent to educate your children. You know, if you require skills, well, you better start a community of people who have skills and who are prepared to teach others and pass on the skills the way we used to. This is, you see, all of these skills and sharing and cooperation, not corporation, not incorporation, it's cooperation, got mankind to where we are today. That's how we got here, by cooperating, not incorporation. Incorporation is actually killing us by the million. And it's been killing us since we allowed incorporation to replace cooperation.
And it very much has replaced it as well, hasn't it? Because it's not like incorporation is existing alongside cooperation. It's by and large, it's almost as if the one has eaten the other one up.
Well, yeah, it is. It's a cancer. It's a cancerous growth, as it were. It's a parasitic. It's an intellectual parasite, is what it is.
Yeah,
it's a tick. It's a disease that we're all suffering from, and it's a dis-ease. But it's just an idea, and we can change it. Very simple. We just have to decide to. That's all.
Yeah.
You don't need to hurt anybody. No need to go protesting. No need to jump up and down. No need to crack skulls. No need to get upset. In fact, I suggest if you're doing any of those things, your time would be better spent elsewhere. Source your water. Source your food. Are you competent to educate your children, your offspring? Can you fix a leaky boiler? Can you repair something that breaks? Can you fix a fence? Can you make chairs and tables? And, you know, can you generate electricity? If not, well, standing outside an empty building, chanting slogans like, you know, well, I say all slogans to me, no, 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 that's all I hear. I don't hear anything.
No action there at all.
It's intellectually vapid, empty nonsense. But it makes people feel good, apparently. People like to go protest. I'm not trying to have a go at those people. What I'm trying to say to those people is, realize what it is you're actually doing. And what you're actually doing is, in my opinion, again, I'll let you know this is my opinion, you're wasting your time. In fact, you're stealing time away from yourself where you could be doing something useful that we, the people of Earth, will find beneficial overall eventually. Maybe not straight away, but eventually.
Yeah. And so it's all that also is a matter of choice, I guess. Right. But that, there's lots of things there that suggest that the laws are not necessarily our laws. I mean, I think it's even more the case in your sovereign republic over there than it is here. But it seems quite clear to me that knowing how to refute that statement is actually as important as knowing how to deal with the laws, when possibly even more important than knowing how to deal with the laws if they are visited upon you. Knowing how to deal with the individuals who are trying to visit them upon you is more important.
Well, I think what most, if not everybody, really should do, again, I'd love to see this happen, is have an L sit down, put the kettle on, and think about these things. Think about, where am I with X, Y, and Z? How do I feel about this, that, and the other? What do I think I should be doing about it? What do I think, in other words? Decide what it is you actually think. And the only way you can do that is to sit down, I suppose, and ponder it through. Bounce around your own melon. How do I feel about X, Y, Z? What would I like to see? How would I like to see the world change? And when you know, when you've decided, well, what's stopping you from changing it?
Yeah, because it actually engaging in that sort of thought process and then enacting it does seem to change the way the world manifests around you. Changing your mind changes the world.
It changes everything. Everything changes. How you even feel about the change is amazing. I mean, I found it myself here. It's incredible that, you know, when I wake up, I don't feel the way I used to feel about just existence. The very fact that I appear to exist and, you know, it's such a wonderful, amazing thing, what we call life. It's incredible. Now, you know, quite flippantly, sometimes I'll say, well, it's slightly better than the alternative, but I don't know what that is.
No. So. Dave also said that these laws are in everyday use in the courts, which I think is only partially true as well. The other thing that he went on to say, part B of his statement, was we're not in a position to change it, so let's use it. Let's accept that individuals in the agencies are accountable to those laws.
Well, again, he, in my opinion, he should be saying to those legal rules, you know, even using the term law for something that's clearly a legal rule, that's a completely different thing. And again, you know, people might say, oh, Vin, that's semantics again. It's not really, it's not, you know, it's, let's try to be precise with our language. Precision of language, will bring about, in my opinion, clarity to a situation that, you know, if you're not clear and precise with your language, will not produce. And therefore, as I say, that's why I feel a lot of these agencies use language in a manner that is unclear. And they get to spin stories and information and confuse and confound people because the language is unclear. So you can't see through it. I mean, even, as you say, even those little windows on the envelopes, they're translucent. They're not transparent, folks. Mm. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
The difference between transparency and translucency.
If we were to use the word more accurately, though, and say that let's accept that the individuals in these agencies are accountable to the legislation that they're trying to visit upon us, that would be a fairly accurate statement, wouldn't it? They are supposedly accountable.
Certainly more than the other one, yeah, absolutely. It's much more accurate than the other one.
And that, of course, is a main point that, I mean, as well as setting up the press group to encourage people and train people to be able to write properly and gather the news, one of the other main threads of Dave's project is to, I guess the phrase is hold these people to their office. They are accountable to the legislation, and he's suggesting that we should we should use that legislation to hold them accountable. That seems a reasonable proposition, does it not?
It's not unreasonable. However, it's not necessarily a path I would go down because, as I said, I personally know how to operate in that regard without causing problems that would raise those issues. But if something like that happened due to the misunderstanding of another attempting to interact with me, and I thought, well, hey, he's got all these supposed rules, regulations, etc. he's supposed to follow, and I don't feel he's following his rules and regulations, well, okay, well, I get to pick that up and bop him across the head with it, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, his superior will say, come here, sonny boy, you don't get to do this. You don't have the power. I'm the superior. You do what I say. Step back into line and they will look at you and say, very sorry about that. Perhaps we can compensate you somehow or other. Here's a little consideration for you. How would you feel if I wrote a few numbers on this check and handed it to you? Well, why not?
Yeah. Yeah, because of course this is down to we're now effectively perhaps looking at people who aren't in a position or who don't know how to ensure that the legislation doesn't apply to them through the various means that we've already discussed, and there are many, many more of them at the moment than there are of us, and I suspect always will be.
Look at it this way. Let's say, for example, somebody does something they should or shouldn't have done, weren't following their instructions. You get to, say, sue, for example, using the person, and you get a check. Well, as you can see by the video I put up on YouTube today, we can use those financial instruments and put a smile on someone's face, a stranger's face. I mean, just think, I'm bringing it back to this again because it was just so wonderful. A stranger, somebody I don't know, chose somebody that they didn't know either, trusted me to pass financial consideration to them and ease their issues in their life and to give them a bit of time to get them to join up into sight here. Really what he wants them to do is to join up into sight and to, give them the opportunity to have some of this perspective and education and outlook that we've all been working out amongst ourselves. So it's a fabulous thing. And it's easily done if you have the sheets of paper, I suppose. But if not, it's not so easy. We don't generally, so we have to go about it from a different manner. But, to have a donor like that, so far, as I said, he's been extraordinarily generous. And he's prepared to continue being generous in this regard, which I find incredible. Because he doesn't have to.
No. I think that's a really important thing because... as I wander around the world, occasionally talking to people about these issues, it has struck me that by and large, the people who are becoming aware of it and aware of what to do with this information are the people who do not have any gaming tokens or who have recently had them taken off them or their home or whatever. It actually seems to be pretty difficult to convince the people with gaming tokens to take these ideas on board. The gaming tokens themselves seem to have a deleterious effect on people's minds. And it's really great to hear that perhaps that's starting to crack.
It's a drug, folks. It's what we call money in this day and age. It's simply a modern intellectual version of cocaine and heroin. That's all. It's an intellectual drug. It's permission. You see, their permission slips is what they are. If you have a big pile of them, well, you've an awful lot of permission. That will permit you to... roll about creation in what people call a Ferrari. It will permit you to live in what people call a mansion. It will permit you to hire other people to act as your servants. It's permission. That's what they are. They're permission slips, really.
Yeah. And, yeah, they don't, the lines of credit, lines of cocaine, no difference.
No difference. Well, in fact, there's a slight difference. The line of credit is way more addictive than cocaine.
Yeah.
So do
we think that the suggestion that corporations are accountable to legislative rules and to taxation and all of that, do we think that that is true enough to be useful if people were to get some understanding, some comprehension of... Because I think Dave feels that a lot of a lot of disadvantages visited on people because they don't understand the procedures of, say, the Police and Criminal Evidence Act, and that if they did understand those procedures, they might stand more chance of taking people to account, assuming that they're not in a position to keep themselves out of the position of needing to do that. What do you think of that?
The simplest thing anybody can do is read the rules of court. Every court has rules, regardless as to the procedures that external organizations may have in their own organization. Once something hits a courtroom, it's all under the courtroom procedures. Don't forget that, folks. Now, you do get to hold their feet to the fire, as it were, if they haven't followed their procedure. But to do so, you must follow the court procedures to do so. And the court procedures aren't actually that difficult to follow. Most people could read them in, you know, an hour or two, sit down and think them through, make a few notes, and then just go looking to follow those procedures to get to the other's procedures, and you really will have no problem. It's very simple. It's not that difficult.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, that's I think a good comment to be making as well. I think it is useful, this, for getting a bit of clarity for us, but I think it's also very interesting and compact for people who haven't come across any of it before. One of the things, another thing that interested me about Dave's comments, and is something I've heard about before, is that it's possible using these processes to bypass things like the CPS and the Attorney General, and it is our right apparently to prosecute people who are causing us disadvantage in one way or the other. These are robust systems, are they, rather than just tokens?
Oh, absolutely. Look, I mean, if you understand the structure, you can take somebody right to the top. I mean, you can literally pull them up to the sheriff immediately if you know how to go about that. And do not forget, folks, there is nobody between the Queen and her sheriffs. Nobody. So if you have somebody who's causing you a problem and you manage to go about it the right way and you pull their ass in front of a sheriff, believe me, they're going to sweat bullets. But you got to know how to do it. And the only way you can know how to do it is, well, you got to read the books. There's no shortcuts. You got to understand and comprehend what's going on, how the whole thing is structured. But if you do that and you get that into your head, you know, I think you'd find very few people would be prepared to mess you around. As long as you're not causing an actual problem. As long as your intent is not bad. And I don't mean your intent in their opinion. I mean your intent. That's where everything comes back down. Law always looks at intent. That's why, for example, physically you may be guilty of sticking a knife into somebody's throat. Physically, your body may have performed such a thing and somebody may actually die, but you would not necessarily go to prison depending upon your intent. So, for example, if it was somebody choking in a restaurant and you're a doctor and you're performing a tracheotomy, yes, your body took a knife, yes, your body held a knife and stabbed him in the throat and there was blood and there was guts and mayhem and the whole lot, and you inserted the tube into his neck. But you did so attempting to save his life. In other words, your intent was positive. Whereas if you're just a common thug and you just stab some guy in the neck to roll him over so you can steal his money, you're going to be in prison for a long time. It's your intent that separates the two acts, even though the act might be identical. If you're of feeble mind or psychotic and you're deranged, again, we forgive you the murder aspect. We say, well, the mind wasn't guilty. The mens rea, they call it. The mind wasn't guilty because either there was no mind there to be guilty of, no significant intellectual presence. We say, well, we feel sorry for this guy. Yes, it was a horrendous act. We feel sorry for the man or woman he injured. However, we're not going to let this guy walk about all over creation. We're going to stick him in either a mental hospital or somewhere, and we're going to try and help him. Now, unfortunately, we know where that leads to in a lot of cases, but that is the intent of the system. You know, all of it's not bad. In fact, most of it, I would suggest 99.9% of the system and the structures that are in place aren't bad, per se. But they are bad for us when you shoehorn into that a financial system that, as Mike Montagna will tell you, will terminate in insoluble indebtedness over time, which, of course, we're seeing that come to fruition right now. So because there's usury built into the monetary system by the banking cartels, it's inevitable what's happening. In fact, it's, you know, you could absolutely guarantee this is going to happen. The so-called governments are fully aware of this. Their position is supposed to be one of trust. They have introduced all of these systems amongst us, we the people, thereby, in my humble opinion, making themselves culpable and guilty of breach of trust. And I think breach of trust, for example, if that guy had sent me those 500 sheets of wrapping paper, and if I bring him back and say, yeah, I sent that to that woman, man, couple, whatever, for the eviction, and I didn't, that's a breach of trust.
Yeah.
Be free to consider me an absolute SOB. In fact, he'd probably, you know, next time he's over here, or, you know, he'd be happy to split my head in two.
Yeah. And
who could blame? So that's how serious breach of trust is. I believe all the corporate governments are in breach of trust against we the people, the sovereign people of this earth. I don't use the term world, as I'm sure you know, because world donates fictitious. Earth donates what you're actually standing on, what I call creation sometimes.
Yeah. So, basically, I think there's a fair point, fair degree of agreement there between you and Dave Eden, that the system itself was originally designed to enable us genuinely to sort things out and to assert, and that you know, the fiscal side of things has seriously polluted that, but it has.
Don't forget, most of the laws of Britain, as it were, look at Magna Carta. Let's take Magna Carta. When that was constructed, yes, I'm aware it was to the barons who was being referred to as the free men, etc. That said, usury hadn't entered the system, the monetary system at the time. So all of those ancient laws and the common law, as it were, on that land, they weren't designed and built with usury, or with a monetary system operating with usury side by side. In fact, England had used tally sticks, for heaven's sakes, for, what, 800 years, very, very successfully.
Good point.
And that's where those laws came from, and they made absolute sense in that system. They were a bit harsh in spots, you know, but it makes sense in that system when you're using tally sticks, because tally sticks don't terminate insoluble indebtedness. Tally sticks rub each other out. When the debt's paid off, the two tally sticks come together, they're bound as a record and filed away somewhere. But the debt's gone.
Yeah.
Effectively, that's what tally sticks.
It's funny, having listened to Mike Montagna, it hadn't occurred to me before, but I remember talking to oldsters who told me that your checks used to get returned to you after whatever records that needed to be kept had been kept, the check came back to you so that you could tear it up.
Yeah. In other words, it was like the king's writs. You see, it used to happen with the king's writs too. The king would send out a writ into the kingdom. He'd give it to the king's hand or the sheriff. He'd go out, execute the trust that was embedded in him from the king, do whatever he had to do, bring the writ back, hand it to the master of the rolls, and the master of the rolls would sew it to the last of the king's writ, roll that up, and wait for the next king's writ to go out, do its thing, and come back again.
Mm.
Same system.
And that's really great, isn't it? Because that in itself would keep the system a lot more manageable as well, because at the moment it's not just money that's inflating, everything's inflating. The amounts of paperwork, the bills, the documents, mortgages, everything never comes back. It just makes it so impossible to manage.
You see, the system changed into something other than, and as you know, you see, what the banks did, for example, is they said, well, we won't send the documents back. In fact, we can't, because we have to keep on selling them after they're sold. Somebody else needs to sell them and resell them and resell them and resell them. So what the bank does is, I mean, most people, when you go in for a so-called mortgage, don't forget, they say, sign here, 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 and here. Each of those signatures you're giving them is for something. Ask yourself, why does it not just require one signature?
It is a question I'd ask myself.
Right. Because each signature is performing a different function. So when the bank sends you a letter saying you haven't repaid your loan, what they're actually saying to you is you have a separate contract regardless of the mortgage. And because and the contract is your performance, the fact that each month, week, whatever, you show up and you pay over. That's what they're suing you from. 1 week, because you clearly believed you owed something to them. Because you've been performing for the last 10 years. To send them a letter now saying, show me an invoice or I'm not paying you any more money, if they're actually correct to say, wait a minute, what the hell are you talking about? Well, you say, well, send me an invoice then, send me a bill. They say, no, 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 we don't have to send you a bill. They don't. Of course they don't.
It's too late, isn't it? Because you've performed on the contract, so the contract is then as presented, really.
Exactly. You've solidified the contract by performance.
Hmm. I'll tell you what, Vin, shall we have a quick comfort break?
Do you mind if I finish up? I got to get some things organised here. Is that okay?
No, no, that's absolutely great. Thank you very, very much for that. I think that was good for me. Hopefully we'll get Dave to have a listen to it as well, and I can have a chat with him about it and things. And it's, I think, a lot easier doing it this way than it would have been trying to deal with it live in the interview. But I think it is such useful and fundamental information.
I'll make an open offer to Dave. Anytime if Dave wants to come and have a chat with me offline, and we can see if we can bounce these ideas around and see if we can get a bit of clarity on some of the issues. Hopefully it'll help him and assist others. I'm more than willing to do that offline, as it were.
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Thanks very much for that, because I think it might well help some of his journalists as well.
Brilliant.
Well, thanks very much for joining me on Dr. Rock, Vin. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, Dr. Rock. It was built for him.
You get back to that massive Skype inbox of yours.
Ah, there's room for more.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Vin. See you soon, mate.
Cheerio. Bye, folks.
This is Media Streaming International Radio.
And Dr. Rock's radio show on msiradio.com and scotlandisfree.ning.com. So, usual thanks to Media Streaming International Radio for letting me come on and do all of this, and a special thanks to Vin. Thanks to the Linux people, of course, the open source software that's now used to broadcast this stuff. I'm sure that it wasn't their fault that I couldn't get on, couldn't get the stream working earlier. And most of all, thanks to all of you guys for being out there, because without you, of course, there is no show. Without you, there is no MSI Radio. I look forward to seeing you all again next week. Here's Leonard Skinner, and you got that right, because we have.